Good morning, a few seconds before 8 a.m. here at KVNF, and time for the KVNF News for Friday, July 12, 2013. I'm Marty Derlin. The committee appointed to review Colorado's renewable energy standards law begins meeting later this week. According to the Colorado Statesman, Governor John Hickenlooper appointed the committee to address concerns raised by companies that would be impacted by the bill. Under Senate Bill 252, rural electrical providers have to double their renewable energy use to a 20% standard by the year 2020. Providers can only raise their rates 2% to pay for the upgrades or changes they'll need to meet the new standards. Some claim that makes meeting the 2020 deadline financially impossible. According to the Statesman, Hickenlooper admitted the bill was imperfect and said such a committee was needed because rural providers had valid concerns that needed to be addressed. The committee is composed of representatives from large rural providers like Tri-State Generation and Transmission and the Intermountain Rural Electric Association, as well as renewable energy companies, nonprofit environmental groups, and the state government. It will look at the issue of rate increase limits as well as the bill's timeline and report back to the state's energy office by November 1st. Hickenlooper attended a celebration of the bill in Denver on Tuesday evening, hosted by Conservation Colorado, the InterWest Energy Alliance, and other environmental and conservation organizations. The Statesman spoke to members of the advisory committee, including Dan McClendon of the Delta Montrose Electrical Association. McClendon said the DMEA wants to invest in wind, solar, and hydroelectric power, but that the law's rate increases limit its ability to do so. The bill's sponsors say they will consider any changes to the bill recommended by the advisory committee. North Fork Valley environmental groups continue their pressure on U.S. lawmakers to keep the area free from oil and gas development, this time in the form of a letter calling for legislation. KVNF's Travis Bubenik has more.
On Wednesday, a letter was sent from the town of Paonia to Senators Mike Bennett, Mark Udall, and other lawmakers calling for legislation to explicitly ban oil and gas development on some public lands around the North Fork Valley. The letter was drafted by representatives of local environmental groups and concerned citizens and was presented to the town council during its Tuesday evening meeting. The council agreed to sign and send the letter on the town's behalf.
It's mostly meant to just start the conversation about legislation.
Jim Ramey, director of the Paonia-based Citizens for a Healthy Community, says similar legislation to withdraw public lands from any oil and gas development is already in the works in other parts of the state.
We know that Senator Bennett has started to work on two initiatives that are north and east of where we are here in the North Fork Valley, the Thompson Divide Coalition over in the Roaring Fork, and then some stakeholders over in Gunnison County on public lands management there. And basically what this is a request to be part of those conversations. There is currently in draft form for the Thompson Divide area. Senator Bennett has introduced the Thompson Divide Withdrawal and Protection Act. Most of that geography doesn't really overlap with the North Fork. There is a decent bit of acreage in the upper, the Muddy Creek watershed that feeds into the Paonia Reservoir, but it's removed from the lower down valley lands that are close up to the communities.
The legislation being called for in the North Fork is particularly aimed at protecting water sources in the valley, but it's also concerned with scenic and recreational areas.
A lot of folks here feel that the best way they could be managed is not for oil and gas drilling, and we'd like to explore the legislative options for protecting the lands that are already really utilized here.
The town of Paonia and local environmentalists have endorsed the North Fork Alternative Plan as an ideal cooperative approach for resource planning on publicly owned lands. But Ramey says legally preventing oil and gas development is a more surefire way to protect the valley's resources.
A federal mineral withdrawal is the only permanent way to protect these public lands from oil and gas development. And a federal mineral withdrawal is an act of Congress that will permanently protect those lands from that industry.
Remy also says relying on lawmakers alone won't make those kinds of laws a reality.
I think it'll be an extension of those conversations, but it'll be input from the community that would really drive any potential draft legislation that would come about.
For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.
A fire of about 15 acres on Green Mountain south of Crawford is out, thanks to Crawford firefighters and last night's rain. Representatives from Telluride, Mountain Village, San Miguel County, and some members of the public met Wednesday to discuss ways to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. According to the Telluride Daily Planet, discussions focused on how to convince citizens to reduce their emissions, as well as new ideas for building and enforcement codes. Presenters pointed to examples like stricter building codes being practiced in Boulder. Telluride Town Councilman Chris Meyer claimed such measures could be employed locally with voter approval, saying the town shouldn't be afraid of a tax to help reduce emissions. Also on the table was the idea of using new revenue streams to reduce emissions. Myers suggested fees could be placed on larger buildings that use more power, with that money going to green energy projects such as installing solar panels or enhancing building insulation. According to the Planet, local governments have committed to reducing their own emissions, but they only account for about 3% of the region's total output. The Denver Post reports both sides in the legal dispute over Colorado's new gun regulations are claiming a first-round victory after an agreement reached on Wednesday. A group of 55 Colorado sheriffs are suing the state over the new laws, which include limits of ammunition magazines that can hold more than 15 rounds and require background checks for all gun sales in the state. Attorneys for both sides on Wednesday reached an agreement to clarify some of the bill's language, which opponents of the law saw as a victory. The sheriffs maintain the new laws aren't enforceable and infringe on gun owners' Second Amendment rights. El Paso County Sheriff Terry Makeda claimed the agreement proved to the public that the sheriffs had credible concerns over the law, while Representative Rhonda Fields, whose son was murdered in 2005 and whose district includes the Aurora Movie Theater, maintained that the regulations are sound and lead the way for the rest of the nation. According to the Durango Herald, Governor John Hickenlooper on Wednesday endorsed an increase in income taxes that would benefit Colorado schools. The Herald reports the governor had already pledged to help fund reforms for the state's school finance system. The tax raise falls under Initiative 22 and creates a two-bracket income tax system. Those making less than $75,000 a year would be taxed 5%, while those making more would be taxed 5.9%. Hickenlooper claims most voters will approve the measure, saying it's more likely to pass than the 24 other possible ballot initiatives the governor's campaign was considering. For Initiative 22 to appear on a ballot in November, voters will have to collect just over 86,000 signatures by August 5th. And finally, the Denver Post reports that descendants of victims of the Sand Creek Massacre have filed a class action lawsuit in Denver against the federal government, seeking reparations they claim were never paid for the slaughter of their Cheyenne and Arapaho ancestors 149 years ago. The lawsuit, filed Thursday in U.S. District Court on behalf of four Oklahoma-based members of the Sand Creek Massacre Descendants Trust, is the most concrete step taken in decades by descendants. The complaint accuses the government and its agents of lawless behavior and hollow promises surrounding one of the darkest moments in Colorado history. At dawn on November 29, 1864, federal soldiers attacked peaceful Indians camped on the ice-encrusted banks of Sand Creek in what is now southeastern Colorado, slaughtering an estimated 163 people, mostly women, children, and the elderly, and desecrating their bodies. The U.S. government, in an 1865 treaty, acknowledged wrongdoing and promised reparations of land and cash to survivors and relatives of victims. The crux of the legal argument going forward will be whether the government ever paid that debt. Descendants claim it has not, while government officials have indicated they will argue otherwise. The trust says it's identified more than 15,000 descendants through decades of genealogical research and recruitment. A judge will decide whether the case meets requirements for class action status. Interior Department spokeswoman Jessica Kershaw said the department would not comment on the pending litigation. Previous efforts at reparations have stalled. Bills introduced in Congress in 1949, 1953, 1957, and 1965 all failed. And that ends KVNF's newscast for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Marty Derlin.